Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode was recorded live at the Food Matters Live Sustainable Food Forum held in London in September 2023. This session was titled, Can Global R&D Deliver? Top Trends in Ingredient Developments. Our panel discusses the crucial role ingredient innovation can play in creating a more circular, less wasteful global food system. Your host is the journalist and broadcaster, Shay Rhodes.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start off by asking our panel to introduce themselves, give us a little kind of 3 minutes about yourself. If we start over here, just 3 minutes about yourself, where how you got to the position you're in and the company you currently work for, what your focus is.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Shay. So Carl Jones, I lead the plant sciences for a part of the corporate segment of Mars called the Mars Advanced Research Institute, where we look at emerging science and technology that can really solve problems of today or of the future for Mars. And if you think about this conversation we've been having, my background is I'm a plant geneticist. I spent a number of years as an organic farmer and then went back to graduate school and then spent many years working for Monsanto and then Bayer. And about 4 years ago, took this role in Mars to really look at innovation in our plant sciences, in our supply chain, and really how do we make that more sustainable. There was a lot of talk yesterday about sustainability of supply chains and what that really means. And in Mars, we look at it from four pillars of both a healthy planet, nourishing people, well-being of people and pets, and then we have a pillar around transforming packaging. So we look at it from that sort of inclusive context, and I tend to spend a lot of time looking at the agricultural supply chain. So how do we make agriculture more sustainable? And really that comes down to, you can look at it from the context of climate smart agriculture, which is really mitigating the impacts of agriculture, making agriculture more resilient to climate change, and then really increasing the productivity of agriculture so that we can address things like land use change and address the fact that, you know, in this meeting we have over these 2 days, there will be an additional 500,000 people on the planet. Agriculture will succeed in feeding 500,000 more people in the next 2 days. And they'll do that every 2 days for every year. And they've been doing that since I was in high school. It's an amazing thing, but it takes a lot of R&D to do that and also give us what we're all looking for out of agriculture, which is not just food, but nourishment, clean water, clean air, healthy ecosystems, and thriving people. So that's my story.
If you move down the line, Zibi.
Hello, everyone. Pleasure to be here. Zibi Levitsky. I've been in the food system and in the food industry for 26 years. Started in Best Foods, went through all the categories of Unilever, including the joint venture with PepsiCo called Pepsi Lipton. In the last two roles, privileged to combine sustainability and R&D, so the innovation and sustainability system thinking. And that's really so rewarding because I believe that science, nature, and what we call chefmanship, which is great taste, are the three levers which are there to transform the food system. I'm also a vocational farmer, so I need to prove the case of food system transformation on the piece of land back in Poland, but that's a kind of 10 years horizon project. In the meantime, I think the headlines for today is looking at the carbon footprint, and that links to the previous session, generated by the food system, according to different estimates, it's between 12 to 19 billion tons of carbon. And if we convert it into value at the current price or even below the current price, we are talking 500 to 600 billion euros worth of carbon value trapped in the system. And I think this value could be untapped, unleashed. And if we couple this with the fact that there is 530 million people working in agriculture, which is probably the most unequal, underprivileged industry. And we combined those forces, bringing natural value of natural capital to bear. I think we have something amazing. And being in the food and agri-tech space these days, I think it's a bless. I think the internet in the 90s is nothing in comparison to the possibilities we have today. But the real unlock will be through data. And I wanted to maybe spend a little bit more time on generating intelligence of the food system, how this value could be untapped. Today, 50-60% of all the top food companies have 50-60% of their carbon footprint in so-called scope 3. So that's in ingredients, essentially. And I think we have a combined opportunity and combined responsibility to lean in and unlock that through intelligence, through the total system intelligence and data. And data. So we can talk about it later.
Thank you. F.
Yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Eve Martinet, and I work at IFF. I currently lead an innovation program called Reimagine Waste. But before explaining what that program is about, would like to explain a bit how it has been created, because that's a new innovation program within IFF. So IFF is one of the largest food ingredient suppliers, not really known by the general public because it's a B2B company. But we offer flavors, plant proteins, texturants, food protection, cultures, enzymes, many, many food ingredients to the food manufacturers, so the brand owners. And sustainability is very important for us. We have our own commitment of, we just had our SBTi target approved, and we are taking our responsibility to reduce our emissions in the industry. But what we realized also is that as a B2B player, where we can have the most impact is by helping our customers downstream the value chain. So the Unilevers, the Mars of these worlds, and the smaller national companies to reduce their impact. And we can do that in many different ways. But what we've been talking a lot during this conference is that we need to change the diets and convert from animal-derived protein to alternative proteins. So we have an innovation program helping the food manufacturers to formulate these tasty, convenient products. And the other way that we can help the industry is reducing food waste. Food waste, it was mentioned a couple of times. We estimate that one third of the food produced on this planet is wasted. It has a huge impact. It's 8 to 10% of the greenhouse gases coming from this waste that it is generated a lot of emissions. And just go to the landfill, that's something that we cannot accept anymore. We need to do much better. So it's plenty of opportunities. At the same time, it's a bit of a daunting issue, right? One third of the waste we need to reduce. So we took an approach of trying to understand, okay, how can we break down this problem into smaller ones? Where does the food waste happen and why? So actually, there is not one easy answer to that. Depending on where you are in the world, food waste happen at different stages in the value chain. And if you take in the developed markets like ours in the West or in North America, a lot of the waste happens downstream in the value chain. So post-production, and at the retailer, in the household, that's where there is a lot of food that is being purchased and not consumed because we have been living in a society of abundance. It was easy to get this food cheap, affordable, and just not consume it. That's the main reason why it's not happening. So consumers are not really aware, and they are, well, they need to be educated that they can do better. If you look more in the developing regions, a lot of the waste happens more upstream in the value chain, so on the agricultural side, and it's because the food cannot be preserved well, so it's lost on the field. Or it's also, you know, sometimes you have surplus production, you have a very good crop year, and you don't have the demand for it, so you need to you need to waste it. Or there are some agricultural side products which are also valuable but unknown. If I take an example, the The cocoa, we are talking to a chocolate manufacturer, so the cocoa is valorized for its beans, but there is a very tasty pulp around the beans, very nutritious, that is just has not been valorized yet. So that's also an untapped opportunity.
Kim, can I ask you, before we carry on, just to introduce yourself, where you, the company you work for and how you got to this stage?
Yes. Hi, everyone. Pleasure to be here. So my name is Kim Olofsson. I head up our global R&D unit. And I think I should also tell you very shortly about AAK, because it's also a business-to-business company. So there's a lot of people that know us, but we supply oils and fat ingredients to basically all food producers around the world. We have ingredients to products like chocolate, bakery, all kinds of other foods, also nutrition, infant nutrition, medical nutrition. We are into the plant-based space, obviously, looking into the plant-based meat and dairy and so on. We also have feed and technical products, and we're also in the personal care space. So basically what we do, we use vegetable oils, so you can call us multi-oil ingredient house, basically. So we develop products together with our customers. And we have been, we still are, a leader within our segment when it comes to sustainability. So this is super important for us. It's not a true differentiator anymore for us, so that makes it a little bit hard. But that is also very good and encouraging, because that means that everyone is now really taking sustainability seriously. So I think for the planet, this is a really, really a good development. But we are also looking into, of course, especially within my team and my area, we look into new technologies in order to bring even better solutions for tomorrow. That could be new technologies like precision fermentation or Power-to-X technologies. We have, for example, recently invested in a small startup, Greenon, where we basically together with them try to make fats and oils from CO2 and clean energy. So I think I'll stop there.
Yeah.
Let's okay. Open up the discussion.
Well, let's start from the beginning, I guess. We start with farming. Two people here with some experience of agriculture. How do farmers respond when you, as producers, come to them and start talking about sustainability and the fact that, as you pointed out, 60% of your carbon emissions are coming from the ingredient side. So you're kind of looking at the farmers going, it's your fault. How do they respond and what kind of challenges do you have?
I'll jump in. I think the first thing is farmers, in my experience, care and think more about sustainability than the rest of us. And in fact, they often feel they're doing very sustainable practices today. But really, there are opportunities in agriculture to substantially improve the sustainability. And the conversation, I'd say, that we have with agriculture and us, Mars, as a CPG company, that often is through partners, through other upstream folks that are actually buying the material from farmers. But a lot of it has to do with first of all, shared values with them and sharing value with them. If you're going to ask a grower to do something different that's going to cost them money, in the end, what we look for and what I look for is opportunities within agriculture where the practices that a farmer might do actually have greater return on investment to them. If you're trying to do things in agriculture that's going to increase the cost and lower their return on investment, most farmers are right at the breaking point already. And so oftentimes, if you just come in and say that, you're just going in and you're asking a business person to lose money. And that's not going to happen. You have to find ways to make that ball roll downhill, if you will. And you know, we have opportunities to do that. You know, you brought up the fact that there's an incredible amount of value in carbon out there, and farmers are stewarding in the soil that they work one of the largest carbon stores on the planet, and so we do have an opportunity to help them valorize that to some extent. It, from a company like ours, our perspective is we want to inset those carbon reductions in our agricultural supply chain. We don't want farmers to have to go sell carbon credits to somebody else. We want our carbon footprint to be as low as possible in that agricultural supply chain. So we do that through conversations around practices, but we also, in some places in our supply chain, like our cocoa supply chain, we work very deeply back into the supply chain. We have a genetics and breeding team that helps breed more productive cocoa varieties for farmers. So if you think about the challenge of that cost, that scope 3 emissions for all these food companies, you know, one of the main denominators there is the productivity of the crop. So in cocoa, for example, you have a lot of areas in the world that the productivity is really suboptimal. And we can help improve that through genetics, through better agricultural practices, and importantly, through data, through digital precision agriculture that can help bring up the productivity of a field to optimal levels across a field. Because in most agricultural settings, what you find is there's a theoretical yield, there's an optimal yield, and then there's what you get on the field. And we're often way below those other two.
Understandable. listening to you, I'm kind of struck by the fact that there seems to be kind of two different approaches to achieving the same thing. When we talked about cocoa, for instance, you talk about helping farmers to produce more productive cocoa beans. Presumably the bean might be larger or something like that. But then we've also heard that there is a huge amount of the cocoa plant that's not used, and that could be potentially nutritious and well used. How do you get that balance between trying to increase productivity but also trying to create new ways more to value. Use what we thought of as waste product?
Yeah, I think the opportunity, if you valorize the waste stream on the agri side, it's to create more value from it. Because today, it's just a side product, it's sitting there, they don't do anything. But for the farmers, they can actually earn more money with the same quantity of work, with the same quantity of land, water, whatever. All of their environmental impact. So that's about helping them. I think that's the role of the food industry, to help them identify what is the value in their side product. And that's an area where there is a lot of R&D happening. It's an untapped opportunity for me. Like, where does it happen? What does it contain? What kind of technology can we apply to it to make it stable, to make it nutritious, to make it good tasting? That's where we have huge opportunities, really. And the challenge is, unfortunately, right now, they are getting access to these raw materials. They are scarce a bit. They are, around the world, often in small quantities. If you think of agricultural waste stream, it's often seasonal. So it depends on the crop. It's going to depend on the year. And a lot of our food technologies, they are made to be optimized, centralized, big scale, to run all year long and have the same output. So to me, there is a bridge to be made to have food technologies a bit more agile, in a way that they could get closer to the waste stream, produce in a more local, small way, and bring this stability that is really important for the rest of the food value chain.
I'm struck, and this might not be the right question for you, but I'm struck by this, the fact that so much of agricultural waste is already put to use feeding animals, which then puts you in an interesting space, because you're trying to create plant-based foods and you're competing directly with your competition for the raw ingredients. How do you think that's going to impact what kind of ingredients and what kind of raw materials are available and can be used?
So let me build on both answers here. And I go back to, again, the intelligence, the full intelligence of our value chain. I will use maybe tea as an example. So this is a cup of tea, sorry, let me hide the brand. But if you think about all the precious bioactive components and nutrients contained in tea, I was only able to extract 25% of the solids at best. And all of this, if the packaging is not biodegradable, will be genuinely wasted. So there is already a trapped value downstream. And if you look statistically, it's 1.6 billion tons of carbon, our downstream waste. And there is another 1 billion upstream. So if you think about fruit, vegetables, tea, cocoa, possibly, there is huge amount of waste before we even know it. Mm-hmm. Think about every drying process. Think about every thermal, aggressive thermal treatment, where most of the bioactive and nutrients are destroyed before we even talk about downstream waste and not being reverted. And I'm coming back to this generating the system intelligence, because only by understanding the full end-to-end what is happening from soil to the final use and beyond, we can collectively understand the total value creation and the total value destruction. And I'm sure there is amazing examples from cocoa where you can divert some of the streams. There is some already amazing results from fruit processing, fiber, citrus or tea, flavonoids from tea, which you can kind of recapture, or even everything that volatiles that go into atmosphere. I would call it bioactive emissions, which no one talk about, is actually preventing bioactive emissions and putting it back to the food we consume, which, going back to previous speakers, it also enhances biodiversity of everything we consume. Mm. So really there is a whole economy by rediscovering the value chain and collectively between ingredients, suppliers, organizations, and let's say category champions, brands, we need to find a way to collect, exchange the data and use this intelligence. What traditionally used to be vertically integrated supply chain from plantation to, or from the garden to the fork, to actually virtually integrated business, where we can find ways to share data with radical transparency so that everyone involved in the value chain, like Carl said, the farmer is just the beginning of the chain, where we all in the chain can understand where it's happening, the system becomes intelligent, the revolution of food can really start.
Interesting. Kim, just to, I guess, touch a bit on the session we had previously, which was about consumers changing their diets and how you encourage them to accept, you know, new plant-based ingredients and so on. What are the challenges when you, as a business-to-business company, when you approach one of your customers and suggest a new product, what are their main concerns?
There's a lot of challenges. But one, I think, is knowledge, misconception, I mean, understanding for what is sustainable, what is not sustainable, for example. We struggle a lot with that. We also struggle a little bit when it comes to the value of sustainability, the commercial value or the perceived value, because we work a lot with sustainability in our supply chains, in our processes. We try to innovate all the time when it comes to technology. We put a lot of pressure on our suppliers because, like we heard, scope 3 is the major concern, to be honest. I mean, we can make our processes and our industry sites very, very efficient, but still we have 80 to 90% of our CO2 footprint is still, I mean, that we cannot control directly ourselves.
Yeah.
But I think the value, if you just talk a new ingredient that we would like to supply, then I think it's very difficult to have that conversation. It's easy to have the conversation, but it's difficult to come to a conclusion. How much is sustainability worth, for example? How do you put the value? So let's say I can create a new product with the same functionality, but it is much more sustainable. First is, how much more sustainable? That is really hard to measure because we often compare apples to oranges. So it's really difficult. But if we manage to solve that, okay, we can compare this technology with this technology, different raw materials and everything, super hard, but okay, let's say we can do it. What is next then? How do you value that? What is most important? Is it the CO2 footprint? Or is it the land use? Is this the social impact of that and so on? and what is most important to the customer, and then what is the price level? Because if I say, yeah, we can do this in a much, much better way, but it will cost you twice. And then many of them say, oh, okay, no thanks, then we're not interested. Because the consumers cannot pay that price. Because that, there is a will, but there is also some kind of level for the affordability. Because if you cannot make that choice in the store, then it's impossible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's a few things that we struggle with.
You touched on this already, but I'd quite like to go into a little bit more. When we talk about raw materials, obviously the world is very focused on climate change. And when you say sustainability, I think a lot of people think climate change, but you've touched on the fact that there's land use, there's water use, there's social impacts. I guess which ones get you the most the most kudos? When you're trying to tell someone that something is sustainable, which of those measures really lights eyes up?
I'll answer that in two ways. One is, I think society is focused a lot on greenhouse gas emissions at this point. But I think the more important thing is that we can't do it for the kudos. We can't do it for the market share. These are things that absolutely have to be done in our supply chains to make the world we live in sustainable, to keep these supply chains viable. So, you know, Mars likes to say we're a 1.5 degree company, that we're going to keep our emissions to the point where we would keep global warming under 1.5 degrees. But Mars being a 1.5 degree company in a 4-degree world does us no good whatsoever. So that's why I say it's not so much about, it may be important to resonate with consumers, but it's actually important that we in the industry make the change, period, and we make that change across the industry, because it shouldn't be a competitive advantage to be sustainable, because we actually need everybody to be sustainable. If it's a competitive advantage, we've got a problem.
Yeah.
That said, what I tend to hear is, sure, greenhouse gases emissions is what a lot of people are focused on, but we have very specific metrics around sustainable water use. We also make a commitment in our supply chain that we won't allow our land footprint to grow as a company, even as we grow our business. And that's a very important constraint, because there's a lot of things we can do to make agriculture look more sustainable, but lower its overall productivity, which means we put more land into agriculture and we have more greenhouse gas emissions from land use change. So we try and keep that constraint hard on ourselves so that we keep ourselves very, very honest about making the changes we need to make.
Interesting. Zibi.
Yeah, just building on this, well, the two areas which I think are really shouting as opportunity, again, they are very much data-driven. One of them is scope for change. And what I mean scope for change is scope for, because when we touch dietary changes, behavioral changes, they cannot be strictly related to scope 3, which is basically measuring your kind of external emissions, but actually how you can influence, and that was the previous panel, dietary changes, behaviors, rethinking the product formats, etc. It's a collaborative effort, and we're truly trying to create the scope for change platform. The other one is design for impact. Since the 90s, there was a lot about design to value. Lots of consultancies actually earned a lot of money, but this is not about just getting the cost to price right. It is a design for impact, where the future will be. And I think there are relatively easy KPIs or metrics that all of us are interested in, starting with greenhouse gas emissions. There are ways of capturing soil health and kind of minimum biodiversity dimensions, and ultimately social elements, if we start with living income, living wage, etc. So there are relatively simple entry points. And the real issue is we don't treat this data rigorously within the whole system. The moment we would implement ingredient impact index with those criteria, we will start triggering change. And I can promise you that if you go to any auction-based commodity today, you will have varying index of carbon loading per kilogram up to 150%, and the ingredient will be sold on the same price. Mm-hmm. The moment the industry leaders or the champions, the volume drivers of the industry start paying attention and kind of introducing the carbon element, you will start triggering the change. And ultimately that will trigger the reformulation of the system. My maybe simplified view would be start with carbon and elementar biodiversity metrics. They will automatically trigger the changes, which will then help redefine the social elements. But that's the most measurable and relatively transformative area to start from.
I'm going to change tack slightly. Ev, can you tell us a little bit more about some of the ingredients and raw materials that have excited you the most over the last few years? You already mentioned cocoa, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, in when you talk about ingredients that help prevent or reduce food waste, you have two types, I would say. The ones that help with the prevention of the food waste, so it's more food protection and extending the shelf life of the food before it's give more times in the industry or the consumers to use it, and the upcycled ingredients, which is, okay, what cannot be prevented, how can we valorize it? And that's really the part that I find is very interesting. And when I talk in the industry, that's where I think there is the most energy right now. Probably because there is a lot of possibilities, but also that's a convenient way, I would say, for the food industry to fight food waste and hopefully reduce their environmental impact. I think in the many food manufacturers, they want to reduce their impact, but they are looking for easy choices to implement in their factories. So upcycled ingredients can be, we do offer some upcycled flavors. Our first generation of commercial ingredients are upcycled flavors from, I take the example of the cocoa shell. So we have cocoa flavor from the cocoa bean, but actually we have also developed a technology to extract the nice component that bring a really creamy cocoa flavor. And that allows to, again, bring more value for the farmers. They are getting more for less. So that's one area that I find super exciting. There are lots of opportunities, but there are some challenges that sometimes with the new technology, so I think a lot of fermentation was mentioned many, many times also over the past few days. You kind of create new type of ingredients. If you ferment these waste streams with fungi and you create something rich in protein and fibers, it's new to the world. How do you position that? How do you make the consumers understand this new upcycled ingredient is better for the planet? Probably better for the health because they are often rich in protein and fibers. But how to position them? That's a challenge that I think the industry still needs to tackle. And educating the consumers is going to be really important. That's where across the value chain, we need to work together. Us as B2B player, we can help bring these ingredients and the technologies, but we need the marketing power of the B brands, but also NGO, all of these organizations that have a public voice. They should help us to increase awareness and acceptance of these new type of ingredients.
Kim, what are the most exciting things that you've come across in your company recently?
Many things. I think what we look into right now a lot, relating, for example, to the plant-based space, is taste and structure. How do you create the right mouthfeel, the taste, the structure, and properties for our plant-based ingredients, or for our customers that want to make those? And saturated fats are basically what is needed for that. And there are not that many options to go with if you talk about sourcing. So there are the tropical oils that have a lot of saturates in it that gives the good structure and feeling. And so it's not just melting away like olive oil. So I think that is interesting. And then also either a new technology, how to produce the saturated fats, or technologies that where we can use other types of fats and oils, but structure them in a good way, in a clever way to give that structure to the ingredient. And there are so many options, but not so many commercial solutions yet, large scale. That could be oleosomes, oleoyells, different types of crystallization techniques, encapsulation, how you play around with your ingredients. But that space is very exciting, I would say.
When we talk about sustainability, we often talk about, I often think about new products, quite niche products, small scale. But having you here really reminds me that fundamentally, at the end of the day, we're looking to scale this up. We're looking to scale this up to Mars level, Nestle level. Is there a danger when you're developing new products, new ingredients, that something that appears very sustainable and healthy and useful on paper, once it's scaled up to Mars level, stops becoming quite so sustainable?
I think there's a lot of danger of that. It's a real challenge. You know, we talked earlier about biodiversity and different ingredients. One of the real challenges of bringing some of those new ingredients that might bring great characteristics that Kim is talking about is oftentimes they haven't had this long history of plant breeding and development. So you bring in one of these new products and your actual yields per acre or per pound of nitrogen fertilizer that you have to use or liter of water that you have to add to the field is relatively low. And but there's opportunities there. I mean, I really believe that we need a much broader adoption of plant breeding across a spectrum of biodiverse crops. We've in our team in Mars, we've started an organization about 10 years ago called the African Orphan Crops Consortium, where we, and within that consortium, we've done two things. One is we've tried to build sort of modern plant breeding tools for those crops, and then we've tried to train plant breeders in Africa to actually be able to bring up the productivity and the sustainability of those crops. So, but I think it's a big challenge for sure.
Mm. I'm going to throw this open to the audience because we've got like 10 minutes left, and I'd love to hear if anybody has any questions. We've got one on the front row as well, but there should be time for at least one more.
Thanks. I've heard a lot of optimizing for land use, for value, but I think there's a lot of value in optimizing for nutrient density. I just wondered if that was on anyone's radar at all, choosing ingredients because they have more nutrients.
I can start and, of course, invite others, but I think I wanted to refer back to bioactive components, which I think if we think about dietary guidelines of the future, where five a day was 25, 30 years ago, I think there is the whole world of bioactive components. We could take flavonoids just as an example, which are present in cocoa, in tea, and a number of other fruit species, and currently completely unaccounted for. And I think this is a brilliant idea of creating not only the impact index, which is kind of measuring your kind of the total system aspect, but also the, let's call it purity or a nutrient density index, promoting the ingredients or promoting the formulations which are actually enriched. In some product categories, it starts happening. So if you look at infusions, for example, you go to the pharma grade infusions, which actually measure bioactive components and their level. And they always secure this level in the products, but in the wider space of the food markets, it's not happening. So actually, this is bioactives could be one of the currencies of food products of the future. And I think it's a brilliant idea, but there may be other angles to it.
Now, if I may, also on valorization of waste stream, there is a lot of potential because actually unfortunately, one of the reasons there is this waste happening, at least side stream in the industry, is because these side products are very nutritious. So they are full of fibers. Fibers is not the preferred taste for the consumers. It's full of polyphenols. It brings some bitterness and some astringency. So there are some sensory challenges to these side streams. But if you look at it the other way around, if you try to build a story that, yes, they have been discarded because it was not the main output we were looking for, but now we want to repurpose them. We want to bring them back into the human value chain because we need to do more with less, but also we need to have better nutrition. I think there is a great opportunity. But the challenge is always going to be on achieving the right taste and texture and the cost that the consumers will want day after day. Mm.
So yeah, I take it roughly that this idea of nutrient density is great, but if you're wasting half the product, that's half your potential nutrient density gone there. Are there any other questions from the audience? We've got one in the middle here. We might have time for one more after.
Thank you. I have a question about clean label ingredients. Mm. Some technologies are being left behind and some other new technologies are being observed to reach this. Taking into consideration the cost that we need to arrive, the sustainability, the traceability, and the actual mouthfeel that we have to get to, what can you tell us about the technologies that are being left behind and the technologies that we're going to look for in the future to get these clean labels?
Are there any new exciting technologies that you've come across? Mm-hmm. That's
That's a very good question, because clean label is it's also very difficult, at least for me. It's difficult to know what that brings and what is clean label. Is it just the amount of ingredients that is counted, or is it what kind of ingredients it is? So to me and AAK, I think it's more about what are the ingredients that we put in, and then if it's 1, 2, or 5, doesn't really matter, as long as it's good nutritious ingredients that have a good sustainability score and so on and so on. So I think we have to take a very pragmatic approach to clean label. And I personally don't really like that expression, if you just say that the fewer ingredients and the more natural ingredients, the better it is. And then you can also open up for the next discussion. Okay, what is natural? What is defined as natural? So I think it would be nice if we were a little bit more pragmatic about it. Is it actually good for sustainability, cost, efficiency? Is it nutritious and so on? And maybe not focus so much on just the naming of things.
Do we have one more question? I think we've probably got time for one more before we need to vacate the room. People were talking a lot about processes. Somebody mentioned fermentation. Pretty old school as a process, but are there new applications? Are you excited by the potential?
I think there is a lot of potential. It is old-fashioned in a way that fermentation has existed for centuries. The wild fermentation has been in the food processing forever. But there are new types of fermentation, precision fermentation, fermentation of different biomass for waste stream valorization. These new angles are, I think they have a huge potential, because they can be more targeted also. So that's continuing a bit on the clean label discussion. I think in my view, clean label is it's moving from natural and recognized ingredients into being more sustainable and more nutritious. And this precision fermentation, where you ferment something with the objective of producing an element of a protein, a bioactive compound, a taste ingredient with very high yield and high purity, that can be clean label if that is if it's lower environmental impact because less resources. Mm-hmm. So that there is lots of potential there. Consumers may not understand that. They might say, it's biotech, it's transformed, it's something that is not natural. But for the industry, it's plenty of opportunities.
Sibi.
The two bills' idealistic goals to your questions. First is understandable label. I would start from there. If we can create understandable labels, that's a really meaningful step forward. And then beyond that, it's a little bit idealistic utopia type of view. But in my view, we have an opportunity to drive nature's factory. And that's the combination of science and nature. The two new things emerging, which I'm quite excited about, is molecular farming, or how far we can direct the plants and cells to generate naturally something we really need, whether it is protein, bioactives, but also through the nature's factory process. If you just restrict ourselves, anything that the cell can do through digesting, or if you take away oxygen and see what happens with cells, you almost generate processes that could be replaced in the manufacturing scale, and then moving directly into molecular design, which is creating this understanding. And the two companies you can maybe take a reference is Atomo Coffee which is kind of creating coffee without coffee bean, or win-win chocolate, or win-win cocoa, which is creating chocolate without cocoa bean, is actually connecting the dots in a meaningful way to create something with least additives and least interventions, which are not within the space of water, heat, pressure, etc.
Yeah, great stuff. Thank you very much, guys. I've learned a lot. I hope you guys enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. Before you go, I'd like to tell you about the Food Matters Live Sustainability Events Pass. It's one ticket that gives you access to two events, Sustainability Sourcing and Navigating EU Deforestation Regulations. They're being held in Ascot on consecutive days in April 2024, and attendees will gain actionable insights on building cleaner, greener, more transparent supply chains, and ensure you're ready for the new regulations due to come into force this year. To secure your pass, just head to foodmatterslive.com. Thanks for listening.